because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, your week in review. J.R., it's interesting. We've been doing this for a while. Mm-hmm. The How Sessions End is so intriguing. And this one is a little different because you reported, WisPolitics reported, that the Senate now faces make-or-break decisions on about 200 bills?
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
So when's the Senate going to come back? And
March 15th is their next day to be on the floor.
One day?
Yes.
And
a long day.
It's going to be a long day. Okay, but let's look at 10 of these major issues. So there's 200 out there.
I mean, a lot of the bills, you know, a lot of those are not
dogs
major
and,
bills.
Dogs
you
and
know,
cats.
They're not controversial. But there are some big ones left that they've decided about, especially the ones that spend money. That's a recurring theme in talking to Republican state senators is we're nervous about spending more money because the revenue projections are not that great right now. I mean, it's not that we don't face a deficit as we speak.
Right.
But we're still a year and 4 months into the fiscal year, and we're not in the best of shape, so we don't want to spend more money and make it more difficult to come in balanced.
And the latest estimate is if you set aside the statutory, they've got about $70
million. Mm-hmm,
but as you point out, there's more than a year to go.
Yes.
Anything could happen.
Yep.
Okay. Let's just look at 10 of these major issues. The Assembly passed a dementia package,
mm-hmm.
and I think it only costs like $2 million. That's what the sponsor said. Don't you see that as something that the Senate's got to sign off on?
Maybe. It's, again, about the how do the pieces fit together in the spending. Now, one of the issues is, as we talked before, the Senate Republican Caucus, you have these kind of vastly different wings, if you will.
Yeah.
And Fitzgerald, the majority leader, has to kind of let his caucus sift and winnow and kind of stew on things for a while before he gets to a resolution. They haven't met yet since the Assembly broke to know what they're going to do. I'm not sure when they're going to meet. Until you get those guys in a room and have them hash out these 160 Assembly bills plus these bills plus these, they're not going to have an answer. I don't think they have a good answer for you about what they will definitely do. But you're seeing signs of, it spends money. We got to figure that out.
Yeah, but everyone spends $2 million. So I really think
only $2 million here, $2 million there.
I understand. But, okay, let's move on to something that spends more. That's Walker's college affordability plan. Last I heard, the score is $6 million. Do I have that right?
$6.5 to $7 million, somewhere in that neck of the woods, yes.
Okay, and that's in this biennium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that likely to be pruned given the fiscal considerations?
That's another one that they could. What you could do with both packages is pass the bills that don't have a fiscal note, you know, and get those out of the way, and come back next year and do the ones that do have a fiscal note. That's just an option. I'm not saying they'll do that, but there are things like that on the table to do. Now, the issue is if you are the state senate and you want to amend any of these bills, for example, you could push back the effective date to January 1 of 17, which means the fiscal hit might not hit to the next budget. Right. The problem is the Assembly's not coming back. At least we think they're not coming back. They have no indication they want to come back unless it's something really, really, really important. What would that be? Tough to say right now. But that's the issue with these bills is if you don't pass them as is, they're not getting done this session, barring a special session, which they don't want to do, or the Assembly coming back, which it doesn't want to do.
Right. But 2 weeks ago, I was there when you asked the governor, what about a jobs agenda? And he pointed to the college mm-hmm. affordability plan as the jobs agenda. So he wants some of this passed.
Absolutely.
But it'll really be up to the senators whether they prune.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This issue, limiting the power of sanctuary cities, telling them that their law officers can ask the immigration status of those arrested or charged, that's fascinating.
It was originally it was detained, lawfully detained. They've amended the bill in the Assembly to make it if you were charged with a crime, and they actually in the Assembly added specific statutes you're charged under to make clear that the backers are saying this is not about if you get, you know, if you're driving without a license or if you're caught speeding. We don't want to discourage you if you're not here legally from talking to the police if you see a crime. But the immigrant community is saying this still makes us nervous. We are not happy about this. They turned out in droves a couple weeks ago to protest it. And it basically got the kibosh because the sheriff's office said, look, it's not a priority for us. If people want this to get done, they better go out and rally support for it in the caucus. Nass and Strobel came out. I think Wongard has now as well, saying we want to vote on it.
Right.
But that's only two or three of the 19. So where do you get the other votes? And then Governor Walker said, I don't think they're going to take it up, and it's fine with me if they don't.
Well, and I was kind of surprised that he said that.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised that the governor said it's fine if the Senate doesn't put this on my desk?
A little bit, because it seems like a bit of a base issue. But also there is this recognition among Republicans of, we have an issue with Hispanic voters, and Donald Trump, by the way, is not helping that issue whatsoever. So we need to be careful where we tread. I know the backers of the bill in the Assembly are saying that it's not about that. It's not related to this. But it has that perception. It's gotten that kind of that feel to it, if you will. That's kind of a driven opposition from the immigrant community.
Yeah, but I say if NAS, if Strobel, WANGARD, if Vukmir, and if Kapinga say, I mean, it's going to be close on whether they bring this out up for a Senate vote.
It depends. You also have, you know, these people who are, folks who are up in not swingy districts, but they're ones that aren't necessarily deep red Republicans saying, do we have to deal with this now? You know, can't we wait until next year? Let's get through the election first and kind of come back and see there's a better way to do this, if you will. So we'll see what argument wins out. And again, the Fitzgerald style is let the caucus kind of stew. It comes to a point where they find level, if you like, water. Yeah. We find our 17 eventually, then we'll go forward after that.
That's a very interesting leadership style on the part of Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald.
He doesn't have much choice at times because the caucus, you have these two wings that they're all Republicans, but they're different breeds of Republicans who come from different kinds of districts in different parts of the state. You could almost draw a line of where the Milwaukee radio signal goes to and see a difference between Republicans outstate and ones in that radio signal, because it's a much different brand conservatism, if you will, at times, versus a Petrosky up north or a Moulton out in Eau Claire, that kind of thing.
That's true. Okay, high-capacity wells. Now, I was at a press conference where the sponsor of the bill, Representative Krug, said, look, this isn't the bill I wanted, but it does force a permanent record-keeping how much water is pumped out of some of these wells and no more permits, so that the Assembly, on its one of the final actions, sent it to the Senate. Do you have a read where senators are? Because we're affecting Stephen's point. Lassa hates it. Mm-hmm. Shanklin hates it.
Fascinating. Isn't this the one that Krug got a substitute amendment attached to the bill, or amendment attached to the bill on the floor and then voted against the overall passage? I mean, that's something I've never seen.
He's been trying to negotiate this for years, two or three years.
Long time. It's an issue because I'm trying to think back early 2000s. We first kind of came up with this issue because they want to pump water for bottled water, but we have demands from agriculture to irrigate, to water their fields. I don't know. That's one of those ones you have to let sift and winnow for a while, and we'll see.
Okay, what about Kirkman's bill? It'd make it a felony to falsely apply for loans or other benefits, loans, grants through WEDIC. Do you see that going anywhere?
It was a late night the last time in the Senate, but at the end, Fitzgerald said not going anywhere, so not going to get it done. So not quite. There's a concern from some that if you add that penalty, you'll discourage people from seeking any help. So they'll be afraid if they make a mistake, you know, a quote-unquote innocent one, that they would then face a felony charge. So that's part of the rub, it seems like, with the caucus about that.
I thought maybe this bill would pass, and obviously what's not passing is any type of reorganization of WEDIC.
I don't know. But then, you know, this is what, you know, Fitz said at the end of a long day. So, you know, if his caucus goes a different direction, maybe. But that's what he said, what it was, a week and a half ago.
Okay, on Monday when I went through the WisPolitics list of all the bills pending in the Assembly, I noticed there were three of them limiting the participation in food stamps. Mm-hmm. Some of them said if you don't use your benefits, I think within a year, they're written off.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that package of limits on food stamps?
A telling sign is there's no Senate companion bill to the three, the photo ID one, that one. They don't have a Senate companion. That's a sign there's not really an advocate, if you will, in the Senate. And, oh, by the way, adding a photo ID requirement, expungent, they have a fiscal note to them.
Yes.
You have to spend money. Now, granted, the backers say we're spending money to root out fraud, mm-hmm. and anything we spend to root out fraud is good. But when you're looking at, again, this cap, the governor's put down $20 million max, that makes it hard to stay under that cap if you do stuff like that.
I think one of the bills on food stamp, doesn't it say you have to show a photo ID?
That was one of them, yes. And that adds a fiscal note. There's a fiscal note attached to that. Another one about if you lose your card, like how many cards do you get before,
right.
you know, stuff like that. Yeah. So those things don't seem to be going anywhere right now, again, because of the fiscal note attached to them.
What about John Nygren's bill that would subject the WIAA to open records? We can all relate to that. We'd love to go through these open records. We probably spent a lot of time yesterday on DOE records, but we'll get into that.
Good question. It's not necessarily like a top-tier bill right now, but it got some quick momentum at the end of session and went quick through the Assembly, so we'll see.
I
can tell you right now.
I don't think that one makes it. And going back to the issue of local control, they want to limit the ability of cities to regulate companies like Airbnb. They want to air on the side of Airbnb. Do you see that as a mover?
It was originally on the Senate calendar last year on the floor. They moved it to committee. But what's happened since then is the Senate committee has taken up the companion, the Senate version of the bill, has amended it to make exactly the same as the Assembly version, and now passed it out of committee. I think it was 4-1, Chris Cappy, the only no vote on that, because he lives in a lake community, mm-hmm. or represents a lake community, if you will, and they already have lots of restrictions on there because, you know, lake homes being rented, kind of a touchy issue sometimes. Yeah. But that bill, because it's been amended now, and they're kind of had queued it up as this is the Senate version, we're ready to move forward. So that seems like it has a chance, if you will, to get done after an odd move at the time of putting the calendar and then pushing it off the committee again.
Right. It was part of the Arena Bucks finance, the Milwaukee Bucks arena financing deal, but it fell out, allowing the State Department of Revenue to collect outstanding Milwaukee County debt. Now, this, we'll talk about Abley versus Larson mm-hmm. later in the show, but I find this interesting because there are representatives like Fred Kessler who really despise this bill because mm-hmm. it's going to, according to Kessler, sick the collection powers of DOR on some of the poorest people who are not able to pay their outstanding debts. So any prediction on this one?
Don't know for sure, but I can tell you that the Milwaukee senators, Democratic senators, who voted for this package back in July after getting this taken out, will not be happy if they pass this bill. Like, there was a deal struck, if you will.
Yes.
The agreement on how this is going to work, and they're basically, in some ways, going back on that deal if they push this through, because this is a big deal for Chris Larson, especially, to vote for the package was to get this piece taken out.
Right. Okay, and the final one of the 10 that I want to ask you about, the Voss Compromise that would limit the ability of public school districts to tax when one of their students becomes a choice student and goes to a private school. Is the compromise amendment that the Assembly passed acceptable to the Senate?
At least the Senate co-author, Leah Vukmir, her office seems okay with this proposal. I mean, the big push is the fix on the, or the quote-unquote fix on the specialty and scholarship.
Scholarship.
To clean up some things, if you will, make sure it works the way
that
they wanted it to.
That was non-controversial.
Not really.
Yeah.
But adding the amendment does. Now, the original price tag, if I remember this correctly, with what Voss wanted it to do, was about $13 or $14 million. Change this is down to about three-ish, four-ish million dollars. And what they're talking about is when you, the way the law was written in the budget for these choice kids going to their schools, you could backfill that lost kid with property taxes.
Yes.
There are Republicans, the sponsors, saying that there's a skim, if you will, in that formula that they're going above and beyond they should be able to go to under the normal formula we've used before.
Right.
This, the $3 to $4 million is the skim, if you will, that are getting rid of the others is the skim. This price tag of $3 to $4 million, that's the skim. If they get rid of that, they think, now you're saying it's really a fair or more fair that you're kind of really actually backfilling for the kid, not getting anything on top of that kid, if you will, for school. So that's okay. Our justification.
I'm
right
looking
now.
For your prediction. We've just gone through 10 issues. Mm-hmm. If one of them forces the Assembly to come back, which issue?
I don't know, because every time I ask Assembly leadership, they say we're not coming back, period.
I know.
Well, come on. Well, what bill would it be? Well, it'd have to be something really big. Like what? Well, I don't think anything. You know, it's like they don't want to come back at all, and they also want to put pressure on the Senate to accept their position on some of these bills and say, well, if you want to get it done, you better take what we did.
Okay. New subject. It was the first poll after the primary in the Supreme Court race. Came out yesterday, Charles Franklin, MU Law School, a tie of likely voters. Justice Rebecca Bradley, 37%. Court of Appeals Judge Joanne Kloppenburg, 36%, which is a tie, given the margin error was 5.8%.
Yes.
And 23% haven't heard, don't know. What does this tell us about the next 5 weeks in this election?
It reinforces, one, that the primary results it's truly a close race. I mean, in a primary, you got to be motivated to turn out, especially in February. There's not much else on the ballot.
Right.
This is a little bit possibly bigger universe of people you're looking at, or a representative sample of bigger universe of people. So it is, in true, a tie. It's a real race. So there's that. The conservative folks you talked to are saying, we have to go out and kind of recalculate the agenda, the plan, if you will, mm-hmm. to kind of help Rebecca Bradley, because we're kind of nervous now all of a sudden. This is a real race.
She got, what, 45% in the primary?
And Kloppenburg got 43.
Yeah.
Now Joe Donald endorsed Kloppenburg this week.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Now, endorsements, look, they sometimes don't amount to a whole lot. There's some question those votes will automatically go to Kloppenburg, because Donald was kind of more the I'm the above the fray moderate. And Kloppenburg obviously kind of towed more of a progressive line in the primary. Bradley seems the conservative candidate, so will that work? And oh, by the way, Donald's from Milwaukee County, where Bradley's from. All these kind of ifs and kind of things and buts to what this is going to work out. But if you're liberal, you're going, hey, this makes it easier to raise money for our campaign. Yes, we know the coalition, like Surfside, is going to run ads and take some tar off of, you know, Joan Klopp, or go after her, if you will.
Yeah.
But we can do the same thing now, because we're going to have an argument to be able to go, look, it's neck and neck. We have a chance to win this race. And, oh, by the way, look at the presidential primaries. It looks like we're going to have an active primary on both sides come April, as we sit right now. We have a chance, a real chance to do this. So come, give us money, we'll go out there and fight for Joanne Kloppenberg.
Well, one GOP strategist told me, as kind of you just alluded to, now we have to remind voters who Kloppenberg is. I mean, one GOP strategist talking about how you help Bradley is, now we have to remind voters. And the Democratic strategist said, if I were running Kloppenberg campaign, I would just have her camp out, campaign full-time in Dana, Milwaukee counties. What your reaction?
One, the Wisconsin Alliance for Reform ran $1 million in ads for basically praising Bradley, like positive bio stuff, tweets for the primary. If you look at the numbers, she still was behind Kloppenberg a little bit in name ID. Now, it's within the margin of error. It's not a huge difference. But it kind of backs up, like conservative said after the primary, of Kloppenberg has some residual name ID from running against Prosser back in 2011. That probably helped her a little bit in the primary. So there's that factor going on. About camping out in Milwaukee and Dane counties, yes. You need to maximize turnout in Milwaukee and Dane counties for sure. But don't forget, if you are conservative or Republican, you have to do well in Brown County and Fox Valley.
Yep.
She didn't do that great compared to Rogensack 3 years ago in the three-way primary up in Brown County. I wouldn't just forget the rest of the state, if you will. There's still pockets of votes in Eau Claire and La Crosse and places like that that you can pick up. But what I do expect, no matter what, is that both sides are now going to go negative at some point. You're going to see an ad war where conservatives try and take the bark off of Kloppenberg and liberals try to take out Bradley. I can guarantee you there'll be an ad with Rebecca Bradley and Scott Walker side by side running someplace, because Walker's numbers aren't very good. That reminds people that the Bradley is an appointee of Governor Walker. So that's the kind of message. And, you know, I'm sure they'll go back to the themes in 2011, that Kloppenberg wasn't tough on crime, or that she represented, you know, this, she was, you know, pro-DNR, or did all these kinds of things. You know, they'll go back to that well.
Well, it's also important to point out that as important as Dane and Milwaukee County are to Kloppenberg, Prosser in 2011 got 19% of his total statewide vote total from Waukesha County.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, I mean, the Wild counties, if you look at the turnout in the primary, they were up a little bit compared to 13, but not as much as places like Milwaukee and Dane County and other places around the state. And Bradley didn't get as high a percentage out of those counties as what Rogensack did 3 years ago. So is that a sign that Democrats are motivated? Conservatives are complacent? I don't know. We'll see in a few weeks.
Well, as you said, the backdrop here is, will we still have an active and engaged and very loud presidential primary, because the traditional betting is Sanders backers or Kloppenberg backers. Fair?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't see a Sanders backer going, you know what, I'm really for Rebecca Bradley. I just don't see that connection right now.
Thank you.
If you look at the Marquette poll, Bernie Sanders has a chance to do well here. Now, we have a few weeks to get to before we get to Wisconsin. Super Tuesday coming up is going to be big. Nevada kind of blunted the Sanders momentum a little bit because they thought they had a chance. Now, hey, 4 weeks ago we talked about a 20-point lead for Clinton, so that was down to 5 points, is noteworthy. But the expectation had been built up that he could actually win that state. So you come in 5 or 6 points down, It kind of blunts that momentum a little bit, and she won South Carolina. So now, because where can he win on Super Tuesday? Can he win in Minnesota? It's a caucus state. That's right. Where he does well. Colorado, another caucus. He should do well in his home state of Vermont. Massachusetts, right next door. So, but where else would he win? And if she gets close to a sweep, I think it's like 11 states, whatever it is, on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. If she gets 8, 9, 10, that's tough to overcome. But there's still, you see a lot of Bernie signs around Madison and Milwaukee.
And he continues to raise money from the small givers. Well, we've been talking about the president. The MU poll yesterday took Wisconsin's temperature on both these parties, and Trump had grown by 6 percentage points. So yesterday, the Charles Franklin said Trump 30%. This is of registered Wisconsin. Yep. This is of Republicans. 30% Trump, 20% Rubio, 19% Cruz. Any big surprise there?
Trump's lead went up, or his share of the vote went up from 24 to 30.
30, 6 percentage points.
What's interesting to me is that it's similar here as is elsewhere, that Republicans are scared to death of Donald Trump being their nominee come November because they see a down ballot impact, if you will. that he will not do well. They look at the numbers where Sanders is beating everybody head-to-head on the Republican side.
He is, by a remarkable margin.
But Clinton is even with Cruz and Rubio, but up on Trump. That is a sign that Trump can't win. And what's interesting, though, if you look nationally and here, if any other Republican candidate in any other election won three of the first four states and was favored big in the majority of polls of Super Tuesday, you would see a Republican establishment coalescing around that candidate saying, okay, it's time to get this thing over with and look toward the general election. That's not happening. Instead, what you're hearing is, yes, Trump got 30% in Wisconsin, but 70% voted for somebody else. There's still a chance to stop this guy. Now, I am not smart enough to tell you if you can really stop Donald Trump. It's rare to see somebody win three or four states and do well on Super Tuesday and not win the nomination. Maybe they can keep him from getting a majority of delegates and have a brokered convention. But and we're projecting way forward here. But if he's got a plurality of delegates and they don't make him the nominee.
Yeah, but you heard Rubio attack him repeatedly on hiring foreign workers and yada.
They're going for broke. They realize.
They have to.
They should have
gone. The 11th hour, as Politico reported.
Done this a couple months ago. But nobody, I mean, again, we thought, nobody thought for, he was real. It's like, oh, eventually he'll go away. This will all go away. But it's not going away. And they're all of a sudden panicking, like, what do we do now? What can we throw at this guy? Because it seems like the people who back him don't care. He says nice things about Planned Parenthood. Don't care, you know?
He says, I want to punch that protester in the nose. Okay, let's talk about the Democrats, because they're really, it's a tie in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Even though Charles Franklin said yesterday, Sanders 43, Clinton, Sanders 44, Clinton 43, with a margin of error of 6.9, it's essentially
a tie.
It
was basically a tie last month. It was a two point edge for Clinton.
Clinton was up last month.
Yes. What's interesting is you've seen momentum, and now I always hear these polls, you know, look for the momentum, the trend, if you will.
Yeah.
Sanders was down 12 in September. Now it's point. Again, there's a huge margin for error, so there could be going. But the trend, the momentum is on his side. Wisconsin was a state that 8 years ago I thought for sure Clinton would do well here. But Obama came in, rode the progressive wing of the party, and to a convincing win over Clinton in the primary. Sanders can do the same thing. I'm not saying he will reach what I think Obama was up by in the teens or 20 points up on Clinton by the end. But there's an opportunity for Sanders to do well with the progressive bases in Madison, in Milwaukee, on the college campuses. Republicans snicker that this guy is just offering free stuff and, you know, pie-in-the-sky promises to a progressive base. But it's got people's attention. And there is a piece of the electorate that is not happy with the establishment, with politicians, and people have been around power for a long time. They are tired of the system. He appeals to those folks, just like Trump does.
But I want to go back to something you said earlier. Why in the head-to-heads does Sanders do so well against 54 to 53 against Trump, Cruz, and Rubio?
What Franklin said yesterday was interesting is that this electorate, you know, the sample that he had, if you take the leaners, those independents who lean one party or the other, it was like 2 percentage points more Democratic than what he usually has, like the long-term history of the poll. There is, in the history of Franklin's polls, almost always a Democratic edge when you include leaners out of the partisan makeup. We are a blue-leaning state, especially in presidential years.
Yes.
What he was saying, though, was it's hard to tell if Sanders is doing well because he's bringing in the sample getting like more Democratic because of the environment, or is Sanders pulling independents toward the Democratic Party, and that's why he's doing it. Because you look at Clinton head-to-head, it's not really playing there. Look at the Senate race. It's not really playing there. But with Sanders, you're seeing these big leads. Is that because he pulls in a new kind of independent, saying, I'm tired of the system, I'm tired of, even though Sanders has been in government most of his adult life, this guy is different. I'm just tired of this kind of thing.
I understand. I think the second best race on April 5 is Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abele versus State Senator Chris Larson. Wisconsin, I went to their first post-primary debate. I just want to take a couple minutes and listen to how they closed that debate. So let's listen to the closing argument. And because he's the challenger, Senator Larson's going first.
We've had a lot of people come up to me over the last week saying, how the heck did you win that primary after being outspent 20-1? And the answer is pretty clear. I'm from here. I was born here. I was raised here. Lived here my whole life. And the reason I'm running is to stand up for my community. From the power grabs, from the veil of secrecy, from the bad deals that we only find out about when it's too late. And because I have an eight-year history standing up for working families. I come from a working family, and that's who I am. That's where my heart is, and that's what I bring. And people know that they can get a hold of me, and they know that as county executive, that'll be the same. You will have a community voice, an advocate for the middle class in the county's highest office, someone who's going to get back to you, not just when you're in trouble, not just when you need it, but before that. We have a conversation about where we're going to go as a community. So with that, we've got 6 weeks, one day, and then the real work gets started. I'm not going to do it all on my own. To be clear, we're going to need to work together to make sure that our county is taken back, to make sure that we have a strong vision together of where we can work to make neighborhoods stronger, to make sure our neighbors have access to a living wage, and to make sure that every family has access to a quality park. Those are the things I know are important to you because I've had thousands of conversations, and that's what we're going to do moving forward. So thank you.
When I ran for office 5 years ago, I said, I'm going to do something about the fiscal condition at the county. Since then, we've lowered the debt deficit and liabilities by hundreds of millions of dollars. I've done that. I said I was going to work hard to finally reform the behavioral health division. We've done that. I said I was going to stop raising fares for transit and stop cutting routes. We've never raised fares. We've never cut routes. We have departments that are not just doing a little bit better than what they've done. They are national models for what they do. I have a stronger team than I have ever had. We know more about what we're doing. We're better resourced. And while sometimes people get frustrated, I'm never going to say there's any category of people politically divided or otherwise that I won't aggressively seek to work with. And yeah, actually, I've had a lot of good luck in Madison getting, and it, you might not have noticed, but we have gotten funding restored for resources like child support. That matters to me. We did get transit at least a little bit. Increase in funding, but we got there not by waving fingers saying whose team wins, who's the enemy, who's the bad guy, who to be angry at. We got there because we talked to everybody and we're looking for solutions, and that's something that I'm always going to focus on. Allies and solutions, not fights and enemies.
I find this intriguing, JR, because of who's lined up against Abley. Abley has had fights with county board supervisors. Mm-hmm. He cut their pay and their authority, but eight state legislators from Milwaukee are working on behalf of Chris Larson. Let me name them. Leon Young, Jonathan Brostoff, Fred Kessler, David Bowen, Chris Hanicki, Tanya Johnson, and Senators Nakia Harris-Dodd and Tim Carpenter. Who can Abley count on besides his wallet, his cash?
Good question. In talking to people after the primary, they thought that Abley's best bet is to try and appeal to moderates and Republicans around for the presidential primary come April, because Larson is locking up the progressive base in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
He's got the public employee unions not like Abley. Talking to one progressive last week, she made the point of, with Walker, we knew where he was. We knew what he was going to do. But with Abley, we felt like he was on our side, and then he turned against us. And so there is that collection of groups who know how to turn people out, who will show up, do yard signs, all that kind of stuff. They are on Larson's side. Abley has the more casual voter who's not necessarily an activist or deeply involved in these things. So how's he going to turn out? How do you get people who are going to vote in the presidential race to vote for him? The Bernie Sanders crew is probably not also the Chris Abley crew. So appeal to more blue-collar Dems like a Clinton supporter maybe. Appeal to those who are turning out the GOP primary. But if you're a Ted Cruz voter, are you really a Chris Abley guy? Because Abley is socially liberal, fiscally more moderate to conservative. I mean, how does that work?
But he's not a natural politician.
No, and what he's got to do is either he or somebody for him has to go after Larson and make this not a referendum on Larson, or Abley, but a question about choice. Abley, this guy you know, or Larson, this guy who has A, B, and C in his background. There's some fodder on Larson from his days in college. He got picked up for, I think, shoplifting. Sorry, the word slipped my mind. Stuff like that. So is that enough to really take the guy down? Or what do you go at? Take some bark off of Chris Larson.
Did I hear you just say for Abley to keep his job, he's got to go negative or some group supporting him?
Hey, he put all that money into positive ads for a month or two before the election. Didn't work.
Right.
It didn't help him. It shows you that Abley may have a group of people, a wide group of people who will vote for him if they have a choice. But the depth is not there. They are not committed voters to him Larson's voters are. That's the advantage that Larson has.
Which is why I think it's the second best race on April 5. Okay, we got to go into WisPolitics stock picks. You're rising.
John Del Rederich. So we haven't really talked as much on the show, but there's been a fascinating back and forth in federal court about this John Doe lawsuit. Cynthia Archer, former Walker aide, has sued basically the Milwaukee County DA's office, well, six individuals from the DA's office, because they investigated her as part of John Doe 1. They suspected that she had done some things that were political while she's in the county executive's office for Scott Walker, raided her home. She agreed to work with them, but now she's filing a suit saying she's targeted politically. That has become the gateway, if you will, to all kinds of fun filings about things, which is why I reported it's been a year, almost 8 months ago, that Scott Walker was suspected, or they believe there's probable cause he committed a crime that never charged him. All these things come out because of it. The latest round's been about whether these guys should keep these records from the Doe investigations to defend themselves against the Archer lawsuit. Remember, the state Supreme Court has said these documents must be filed under seal from John Doe, too. Well, the DA's office says, well, look, if you're taking all these records from John Doe 2, it encapsulates some from John Doe 1. 2 was about coordination between Walker and Walker's campaign and conservative groups. 1 was about activities in his county executive's office. You're grabbing stuff from 1. We need the stuff from 1 and a little bit from 2 to protect ourselves against this Archer lawsuit. If you put it all under seal, we don't have it. It's a problem. So federal court, please save us. Brad Schimmel has been going, no. This is a matter of state versus federal authority. The state court has said what it said. You leave it there, federal court. I want to file this amicus brief to do this. After he filed the request, went out and said these guys grabbed these documents illegally. It was a legal search.
They were offended. They said, you've defamed us, Attorney General.
Yes, and now they're going back. This guy is, sticking up with his political allies. It's really a fascinating law enforcement tit-for-tat, if you will. You don't often see DAs and the AG, the top cop in Wisconsin, going at it like this in public. It's not very often you see it, but it's been fascinating. If you're a junkie who likes reading this stuff, they're great court cases. Get on Pacer, read it.
Well, and this is the same Brad Schimmel who told the U.S. Supreme Court how to rule. If it gets to you, toss it.
And what's been interesting about Schimmel is there's this perception, and Peg Lautenschlager, former Dem Attorney General, wrote an op-ed piece this week saying he has got a political agenda, if you will, as AG. I don't know if that's the case as much as it. We got used to J.B. Van Hollen, who never seemed to win. Conservatives thought he wasn't political enough. Liberals thought he was too political. And J.B. always said, well, I'm just basically warning the office on the law, if you will, not in the politics. We're seeing more a move back to a more partisan approach, if you will. Yeah. It's not like Peg Lautenschlager or Jim Doyle before her were like pure as a driven snow when it came to how they operated the office. But, it's a different time, if you will.
Okay, mixed. Legislators
and retirements. So we've got a half dozen so far.
Yep.
Now, what's been interesting is most have been Republicans at this point, mostly in the Assembly. We have one Republican Senator, Rick Gudex.
We have six Republican leggies who have announced they're heading for the exits. 5 R's, 1 D.
Yes. 4 in the Assembly. We're still keeping an eye on a couple that might leave. But what's interesting is we're still not quite where we've been the last few cycles. We've seen more than 10 the last several cycles. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but it's been higher. Part of that, we're not seeing that, is this. Robin Voss went to his members back in 2014 and said, look, if you're thinking about retiring, do it now. Don't do it in 2016. It's hard to keep your seat. Do it now. Otherwise, you're here for 4 years, essentially.
Okay.
Then 2018, when it's easier and off year, you can retire then.
Okay.
A couple have not taken that advice. People like Dave Heaton up in Wausau, who honestly would have a tough time winning re-election anyway.
Because he won by 85 votes.
Dumb-leaning
seat. 2014, yep.
So there's that. Dean Knutson, John Murtha, Tom Larson. I think Larson's seat, the most competitive of those, as we sit here right now. You may see more retirements because people are going, look, something's not right in this electorate this year. It's an anti-incumbent, anti-establishment. Do I really want to stick around for this? Oh, by the way, it's a pretty partisan body right now. Am I enjoying this? So a guy like Al Ott, who's been waiting to see what he's going to do, he's been around. He's a dean of the...
He wouldn't tell me last time I asked what he was going to do.
He's a dean of the Assembly Republican Caucus at this point. He's here for much a different time, So we're waiting to hear on him, for example. Now, Nikia Harris-Dodd, Milwaukee State Senator.
That was
State
a surprise.
Surprise.
I want to stay home with my 16-month-old son.
Said, I'm not afraid of tough challenges. Oldest of 13 kids. Raised my youngest 3 siblings if my mom passed away. Right. But I have a higher calling right now. So there may be some more retirements. It's just that right now we're not quite where we... So it seems like, these guys are retiring, but it's not unusual. It's pretty common to see this kind of thing.
Okay. And falling?
So Kathy Bernier, I don't know if you read the Chippewa paper this week.
Yeah,
but
she walked... Go ahead. It's your story.
Interesting interchange, if you will, with local officials. They had a meeting with local school officials, and one of the school administrators from Eau Claire, I believe it was, started to compare Wisconsin to Minnesota. This is the favorite Dem talking point these days about how they're doing versus up. Bernier said, got up, left, said that it's a vile comment, I'm out of here. What was interesting is, you know, look, lots of people in office don't enjoy these meetings, okay? They get tired of being complained at about what's going on. It's rare to see one walk out. It's even rarer to have somebody the next day make it a two-day story where she says, you know, defiantly kind of says, look, I'm not going to put this up. And she also said, going to these meetings is like going to the dentist sometimes. That's not going to sit well with people back home.
In an election year?
Yes.
She's three-termer. She only got 52.8% of the vote last time.
Now, here's the thing. This is not what – you don't lose an election because of this. It gives you fodder, if you will. And right on the heels of this announcement, an attorney from Altoona, I think it is, announced this week he's running for her seat, you know, as a Democrat. So it doesn't really lose you an election, but it doesn't help. And it also speaks to a broader problem Republicans have of losing the message on education funding. You know, Republicans will tell you, like, look, it takes a Democrat 5 seconds to say they slashed funding for education in the last 5 years. It takes us a longer time to say, look, we have a Medicaid issue that sucks up all the extra dollars, and we've been trying our hardest to find money for education. It's a longer discussion to try and have and to make the argument, well, we'll keep your property taxes low, your schools are still there, Act 10 gave them tools. It's whenever you're in politics, you get past 30 seconds, you've lost the discussion, if you will. So this is kind of speaks to the issue they have to worry about this fall about education funding.
And the her seat is one of those that they always worry about.
Absolutely. Going back to October of 14, some Republicans walk around saying, we're not going to win this seat. It's going to be tough.
Right.
But WMC pounded the heck out of her opponent and helped her win in the end. It also was a great environment for Republicans. Now, we'll see come November what the environment is like in Wisconsin, what resources are there. But so Democrats have to not only have a good candidate up there, they have to have resources and a message. Those are things to help you win, not just something like this.
Okay. And before we sign off, next Friday we're going to interview the executive director of the Republican Party, Mike Duffy, and following Friday, March 11th, State Democratic Chair Martha Lanning. I know I said 1 week ago she'd be here today, but we had a scheduling snafu. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.